From WJCT in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
I'm Sean Birch.
And this is Deemable Tech, episode 81. Don't call it a gate.
The Deemable Tech podcast is brought to you by A Small Orange Homegrown Hosting, a refreshingly different approach to web hosting on the web at asmallorange.com.
Thanks, as always, to our Redditors. Go to reddit.com/r/deemable or deemable.com/reddit to vote for which stories you think we should talk about on this show and to submit stories of your own.
And if you're listening to this show on the website, make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes or Stitcher, either one, whichever you like, and make sure to share Deemable Tech on Facebook and Twitter and all the places where you share stuff. So let's get right into the big stories in the tech world for this week. Here is this week's rundown.
All right, let's start out with kind of a fun story. Earlier this year, the Internet Archive added roughly 2,400 MS-DOS games to their digital archive that are playable through your web browser on their site, archive.org. But if you are too scared to leave Twitter to check it out, don't fear. The folks at Wired discovered this week that you can embed the games inside of tweets and then play those games right from those tweets.
Whoa.
You don't even have to leave Twitter.
Living the dream.
So you can now get your Oregon Trail, SimCity, or Wolfenstein 3D fix straight from Twitter. Or you can try out all of the other classic games like my favorite, the adaptation of the 1991 Hulk Hogan cinematic masterpiece, Suburban Commando.
Wow.
Just kidding. Don't do that. You will regret it.
Oh, man. They have Pac-Man?
Of course
they have Pac-Man. Castle Wolfenstein, of course. Oh,
yeah,
my gosh. Leisure Suit Larry.
Yep, they have
Batman
all those.
Batman Returns.
Basically, any MS-DOS game you can think of, like every single Where in the World or Where in Time or Where in Space is Carmen Sandiego.
Not Street Fighter 2, probably.
It's one of them. Yeah, one of the Street Fighters is on there.
Probably the one you don't care about.
Prince of Persia is on there.
That's right. I like the original Prince of Persia. Sean, I think, was on the fence.
Monopoly. But, yeah. Even Monopoly is on there. Monopoly Deluxe.
Yeah. Wow. In case you don't want to fight with your family, you just fight with your computer.
There you go. Yeah.
There's like 10 different versions of Wheel of Fortune on there.
Oh, good.
So check it out. Have some fun.
That looks amazing. So this isn't on the Twitter app, I'm assuming. This is only on the desktop version.
I would guess so. Okay. You have to have a keyboard for most of the game, so I don't think you could play on the app. But if you are on your web browser and you're at Twitter right now, tweet us your favorite MS-DOS game. Just go ahead and do it. And we will probably spend all day playing those games.
This is tremendous news for people whose job is social media management.
Oh, this is terrible news because I am going to get nothing done tomorrow.
All right. Google has officially announced its long-rumored cellular data network, and its name is Project Fi. Why not?
Yeah.
As anticipated, it is an MVNO network, which basically means that Google is renting time on someone else's network, like many other small cellular companies.
Hmm.
The difference is that Google is renting not from one other network, but from two, Sprint and T-Mobile, as well as using Wi-Fi. So basically, when you're on a Project Fi connection, your phone will seamlessly switch to whichever one of those networks is strongest. So Project Fi offers actually a very straightforward billing structure, which will be appealing to some. It will also let you bank unused minutes each month, and it offers promises of more Google innovations to come. There is one pretty big catch. Right now, it is only offered for a single phone, the Nexus 6.
No iPhone?
No.
That'd be really funny if
anything. Like, forget, you know, get the Galaxy S6 Edge, you know, if you don't have a Nexus 6, sorry, go home.
Well, I could see it needing to be restricted to some devices because you're switching from GSM to CDMA.
Right, the Nexus 6 has a special radio chip in it.
It's got to be a world phone, yeah.
Right.
That's interesting.
And there's no LTE high-speed service either because of the fact that it's doing this network switching deal.
This is interesting that this comes out right after the iPhone just was enabled for Sprint users to switch to Wi-Fi for voice over Wi-Fi.
Hmm.
Now, I'm a Sprint user and I have an iPhone and I haven't tried it, or maybe I have and I didn't notice. But I haven't had phone problems lately, so that could possibly be the reason why. Yeah, because it is like a Faraday cage here at the station. Cell phone signals get blocked, and whenever I get a call, I can't hear anything. But I didn't pay attention to whether or not it was going across Wi-Fi. But it's interesting. So they're going from Sprint to T-Mobile or Wi-Fi,
right?
Whatever works.
And my impression, and this is all a little bit, I don't think we have all the details yet. I kind of got the impression from the way it was announced that it really is Sprint and T-Mobile and Wi-Fi. Like, they're going to try and have it be pretty assertively trying to get on Wi-Fi networks.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah.
I don't know.
That's cool. And this is just like Virgin Mobile and the Walmart brand,
right,
where they're just renting bandwidth.
Yeah, basically. And I think that's called that's the MVNO thing. It's like mobile virtual network operator or something
you
like that.
You just hit the nail on the head. That's what it stands for. Cool.
I'm a nail hitter.
Now, will they have a phone that will call people for you, sort of like the Google driverless car thing? Huh? Are they going to come out with that?
No.
Because, there are some people that I just don't want to talk to.
That'd be a great service. That would be... We will call people for you.
I think you just hit the next tech crunch.
I know, that's a startup
right there.
Google, if you are listening.
It calls your mom for you. I bet there is a service that calls your mom for you. Tom, look that up and see if it exists.
No, but I think this is way bigger than calling your mom. Like, you know that call you've been putting off for a long time until, like, even just making the call would be super awkward because you should have called them 3 weeks ago. And at this point, it's going to be just like, why am I even calling them? Like, that call. There should be a service that makes that call for you.
Yeah. So some robot would, like, call someone for you and talk for
you. Maybe. Or maybe it's, like, a super nice, well-trained person that will somehow make you seem smooth, even though it's clearly a person you've paid to make the phone call for you.
I mean, could it be someone pretending to be your voice? I mean, is it assistant?
If we had the technology.
I
feel like we're getting kind of far afield on this story.
AI is getting advanced, and I'll tell you what. The robots are coming to steal your car.
What? Is this a segue?
This is a segue. I submit that as the best segue of the show so far.
The show is
for your vote. Or they could just be trying to move it out of the way. Gizmodo shared a story that researchers in Europe have created AVERT, the Autonomous Vehicle Emergency Recovery Tool.
Well, that's a good acronym.
Yeah, it is. It's a system of robots that look something like... They look like something out of BattleBots. You guys remember BattleBots?
Mm-hmm.
Which actually, I hear it's coming back.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah.
So you remember how the best ones were always the flat ones
that would just flip things over?
Yeah. They were always the boring ones.
Yeah.
Well, these are pretty boring robots. They're like flat pieces of steel with rotors on the ends of them. And what they do is two of them go to each wheel, so there's eight total, and they just lift the car up about an inch off the ground. Which is just enough to roll it away.
Okay.
So they get underneath it and kind of just like a Roomba, they all work together and they go whoop and pick it up and roll it out of the way. So, and they only need to lift it an inch off the ground because that's all they got to do to get it out of the way. Now, the idea is that these robots could easily move a car that's parked in a tight spot, like, for example, in a parking garage, if there was a bomb in one of the cars.
Mm.
You know, they could move a car out of the way and then get in there with the bomb robot and, you know, deactivate the bomb or whatever. Because this is actually a problem that's happened where they can't get to wherever the danger is because... Mm. There's a car in the way. And of course, it could also be used to move illegally parked cars or cars that are blocking emergency services. When the robots become sentient, then, you know, they could just start a career stealing cars. That's also a possibility.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Okay, well, in Law & Order news, police say that at 7 p.m. on a Monday, Lucas Hinch, the owner of a homeopathic herb store in Colorado Springs, Colorado, took his Dell XPS 410 out into an alley behind his store and unloaded eight bullets into it with a 9mm pistol.
What?
Wow. Yeah. Hinch was ticketed for discharging a gun within city limits. Hinch told the Los Angeles Times, which interviewed him, that the machine kept giving him the blue screen of death and that he had, quote, had enough.
All right.
He said that the shooting was also, quote, definitely premeditated and that he had no regrets. He reportedly told officers he did not know that he was breaking the law in discharging his weapon, but he had attempted to make sure that it was safe and would not ricochet or hit anybody.
Huh. Yeah. All right.
So, I thought, let's have a moment of truth.
Uh-huh.
Let's go around the room here and want you guys to answer this question. Ray, have you ever fired a weapon in anger at a computer?
I've wanted to, but I've never done it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I ever had the opportunity. I never had a loaded weapon and a frustrating computer at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had both, but I've never had them at the same time. So
there, but for the grace of God, basically.
But even a BB gun. Well, no, I've had a loaded BB gun within range of a computer. It just never got to that.
Mm-hmm.
It never got to that level of frustration.
Yeah, I don't own any weapons. I have done the classic slamming your keyboard or mouse onto the ground. But
now, Sean, I was going to expand this question for you include soundboards and audio equipment.
No, most of the time they're very good. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no reason to shoot them whatsoever.
Oh.
Now, speaking of blue screens of death and technology that you want to shoot, let's talk about Microsoft for a little bit.
All right. Nice. That was a good transition.
I'll put that one in there. Yeah.
Right.
During the opening keynote of their Microsoft Build Developers Conference this week, Microsoft unveiled the successor to the Internet Explorer browser.
That's right.
Oh.
Which they recently announced was they were ending. I guess it was probably 2 months ago or something
that.
Or they said
Windows 10. And they're moving on.
Yep. The new browser called Edge,
ooh,
which was formerly Project Spartan, is
they're really going in for the cool
I know. Edge.
Is that name is kind of edgy.
It is a little edgy.
Is that just too low-hanging fruit?
This was how that conversation went. Guys, we need a really edgy name for this browser.
I got it. No, guys. Hold on. I got it. Edge.
Whoa.
Whoa. We're done. We're done.
They saw the, is it the Galaxy Edge?
That's
is
right.
They saw that and they were like, we gotta take that.
Or they were just totally stealing from Chrome.
Yeah.
Which is basically the same name.
Yeah. But it is said to be faster and more modern and will be a universal app that will work across all of the Windows devices. So if you have a Windows phone and a Windows laptop, it will be the same. Sort of like Chrome is.
Yeah.
They sort of offer it. Features will include, among others, extensions like the ones you will find for Chrome and Firefox. Integration of Microsoft's Cortana virtual assistant to help you search for things.
Cool.
I saw a little demonstration where, you know, you'd be on a website where there would be an address and you could click on that address and one of the options would be, you know, ask Cortana to look this up and look it up for you.
That's cool.
Reading mode, which removes everything from a page except for the text. So you can just kind of focus on that.
Oh, that's cool. I like reading mode.
Yeah, it'll get rid of, you know, the ads and everything.
Yeah.
And an annotation tool, which I think is called Markup, is the name that they gave for it, which lets you draw on a web page, take a picture of it, and then share that picture on your social media.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever wanted to do that, but, you know, if you want to, you can.
I have wanted to do that, and I just did it. I just took a screenshot and opened Paint and draw on it and share it.
Now, normally I just take my Sharpie and I'll circle something on the monitor.
You won't have to do that anymore. So apparently this is for you, Sean.
I've wasted so many monitors.
I'm really torn on Cortana.
Yeah.
I love Cortana. She's a great character. I feel like as soon as you put virtual assistant after Cortana's name, you just turn her into Clippy.
Mm-hmm.
And I am worried that they're going to destroy Cortana as a character.
I mean, Cortana's she's already a virtual assistant. She's been going for a while now. Like, if you have Windows Phone, you have Cortana today.
Right.
Now, Cortana, for people who don't know, she comes from
Halo
games. Yeah, mm-hmm. There's a character in that.
She's a little person. A little hologram.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have a friend who had a Windows Phone.
She got exceptionally anatomically correct in one of the versions. Like, I mean, she's always been basically a nude character, you know, with, you know, digital stuff like Matrix going over her. But there was one version I was playing with my brother-in-law, and I was like, whoa, Cortana, put some clothes on, babe. It was just too much.
I'm just going to leave that there.
No, moving on. Moving on.
But I was just going to say, like, you know, I've seen her in action. Now that's weird to say. Thanks, Ray. As a virtual assistant.
Okay,
and, she's pretty fast and responsive. She's, you know, seems like a Google Now type experience. Oh, God.
Oh, man. One more thing about Edge. The new browser will not be in the initial release of Windows 10 this year.
Really?
But will be in a later update. Windows 10 will be shipped with Internet Explorer 11 for legacy compatibility reasons. So,
yeah.
So you will have one last chance to use everyone's favorite browser before it goes softly into that good night.
One last chance to use it to download Chrome.
So will it be the default later on?
I guess so, yeah.
All right.
Okay, well, if you are tired of remembering your passwords, maybe in the future you could swallow them instead?
What, like write them down and eat them? What would that,
no,
what would that do?
Not exactly. In a recent interview with the Wall Street Journal, PayPal's global head of developer advocacy, Jonathan LeBlanc, said that passwords might soon be available as embeddable, injectable, and ingestible devices. Mr. LeBlanc said that in the near future, thin silicon chips might be embedded under our skin, or capsules might detect glucose levels to verify that someone is who they say they are. The Wall Street Journal notes, Mr. LeBlanc admits that there's still a ways to go before cultural norms catch up with ingestible and injectable ID devices. What do you guys think? Would you be willing to swallow a pill to verify that you are who you say you are?
It's the mark of the beast.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, if it ever came to that and that's all that you could do, then yeah, whatever. But I don't know if I would voluntarily do
I'm pretty sure that they're going to require this to be injected on your right hand or on your forehead. Little Bible trivia there. That's where the mark of the beast goes. I mean, I know a lot of people will actually, that'll be their first thing, like which anytime any electronic cash or any stuff like this happens, that's what people start freaking out about. But I see it becoming more of a realistic possibility as wearable technology becomes more prevalent.
Yeah.
You know, and of course now that the Apple Watch exists, you know, it'll all become prevalent, and just like Apple Pay made electronic payments a legitimate thing. I expect within, you know, 3 to 5 years it's going to be pretty much the norm. And then I think people will start considering, like, oh well, I hate it when my Apple Watch dies, or my iPhone dies, or my Android device dies, my Android watch. You know, it would be great if I could just have it on me and it never went, it never died on me, you know? Because that was the thing, using the Loop Pay, which you know, we got the review unit. I loved using it, but it lasted so long that when it would die, I'd be like, oh man, what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
You know, and that was the frustrating part. So,
yeah, and I guess these little devices in your body, like your body has a lot of energetic things going on. So, I think in the article that he mentioned, maybe like your stomach acid could power ships. And I know, you know, obviously there's various electrical currents and things running through your body. So,
heat,
yeah,
motion,
it's all there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it could potentially power a device for a long time that was inside you.
Well, and there's NFC chips too, that the radio frequency actually powers the device. Like it picks up the radio frequency that powers the device for it to respond back. And that's all it needs. So I could see it being, like I said, I think it's going to be wearable tech first. Once wearable tech becomes the norm, then I could see injectable tech, I guess you'd call it, catch up with that.
Has anybody seen my passkey? Oh shoot,
it's in my face.
I just ate it. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, how long would those last, the ingestible ones? That would be my question. Yeah, if someone accidentally swallowed yours.
Yeah. Ingestible, no, I don't see that being legit.
Like you have to wake up every morning, swallow your password.
Yum.
Take your passwords.
All right. I have no way to transition from that. All right. So as people who use Chromebooks already know, Google already kicked the caps lock key to the curb with its Chromebooks. If you use one, I actually have one in front of me right now. Where a caps lock key would be is now a search key, which always throws me every time I want to use it. And now it appears that they may be preparing to do the same thing with the space bar.
Ooh.
In a patent filed this week, the company outlines a design where the space bar is replaced by an extended trackpad.
Oh.
Like for your mouse. Sensors would determine whether the user wants the top of the trackpad to be treated as a space bar or as part of the mouse. Google told Quartz, who broke the story, that some patents get turned into products and some don't.
Yeah.
So only time will tell whether we will see a spacebar-free Chromebook. I don't know if I could really do without a spacebar.
I want to go on record also saying I think this is a terrible idea. Like, I already have a context-sensitive, quote-unquote, trackpad on this laptop. And this is a very nice laptop. This is a very advanced trackpad. I fight with it constantly.
Really?
Yes, constantly. Huh. I do not need...
I'm going to fight with your trackpad.
I do not need... There you go, yeah.
Okay.
Stop touching it, centrally, okay? I just don't want to have, like, another... ongoing battle with my trackpad over whether or not I was trying to hit the freaking space bar. Just give me a space bar.
And I know
yeah, I guess that could be irritating.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that.
One thing about this, and maybe yours has this too, Ray, is like this has a kind of a sensor on it. It tries to guess when you're typing and then it will kind of sleep the trackpad so the trackpad's not jumping around while you're typing.
Well, like right now I have my hand on my keys and I'm just moving my wrist.
Palm.
Yeah. And it's not even detecting it.
Yeah.
Right. So it's already kind of like having that conflict it has to resolve. So I don't want to like imagine then like, okay, but the trackpad now has to be somewhat enabled so it can do a space bar things.
I know that everyone is trying to save as much space as they can to make, you know, all these electronics smaller and smaller. But using this Chromebook that I have in front of me, it's a Samsung. The trackpad on these are terrible.
They're terrible.
You know, it's, you know, a $200
that's my one
laptop.
Complaint, yeah.
So, you know, maybe I shouldn't expect too much, but the idea that you're going to put something else in there with a very cheap trackpad, it makes me scared that it wouldn't work.
Well, maybe they could save enough money by not putting a space bar in and then they could bump it up and
everything
get
else
would
be more
trackpad.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's space bars are expensive.
Yeah. And also, I looked at the...
imagine the money they'll save.
I looked at the patent for this, and I guess it does save space, but it doesn't seem to be that much space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the space bar is like, what, a half inch or, you know, a centimeter and a half, you know,
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. That, I could see... I mean, I like the idea of, you know, making them smaller, but it might not be worth it.
Yeah, so. Who knows? As they said, this may not actually turn into anything, but they just had to get the patent out there. I did read something else that they'd been trying to get that patent for this specific thing for a while. It's actually taken them like 2 or 3 times.
Oh.
So, I don't know.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Maybe they're serious.
Well, last week, you know, something happened in the tech world, and it's kind of a big story or whatever. The Apple Watch came out. Whoopity-doo. So if you listen to any other tech news podcasts, including even New Tech City talked about Apple Watch, which they're not into gadgets, another podcast I enjoy listening to. But so last week, you know, it came out, and as usual... people had problems, but if we could just not call it a gate,
gates.
If we can, no gates, don't put gate at the end of everything just because it's a scandal. There were 3 stories that came out. First, report came in on Twitter and Reddit that people with tattoos on their wrists, they may have difficulty using their new Apple Watches.
Wait, what?
Yeah, so actually, I'm included in that group of people. I have a tattoo on my wrist.
Mm. Oh, you do?
Are
you having trouble with your Apple Watch?
I'm not having any trouble with my Apple Watch at all. It's not performing at all because I don't have one.
It's non-existent.
Non-existent problem. So iMore.com looked into it, and they actually confirmed these reports. The reason why is the heart sensor, which was kind of lauded as a big deal with the Apple Watch, it detects your pulse by flashing an LED light on your skin, and it senses a reflection that is caused by the blood that's flowing through. The problem is when you have a tattoo on your wrist, then the reflection is distorted by the ink. So it can cause your pulse to show up as really fast or not at all, like you're dead. And, you know, your mileage may vary depending on your tattoo. Different colors apparently acted differently. iMore did a non-scientific test that they compared it to non-tattooed spaces versus tattooed spaces on wrists and other parts of the body. And the non-tattooed always showed up the same. But tattooed, it was all over the place. Different colors reacted differently. So I don't know if something is... I have like a simple design, just like a pen drawing looks like. It may not work or it may cause a problem.
But wouldn't the tattoo need to be under the watch?
Right. I'm looking at the wrong side of my wrist. Yeah. Mine is on the inside.
The top.
If it was on the top of your wrist,
Like my Betty Boop tattoo.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have a Betty Boop tattoo.
That'd be pretty great. Yeah, if it's... You're right, Tom. Thanks for pointing that out. If I wore my a watch like a nurse on the inside of my wrist, then it might be a problem.
I thought you were going to say like a nerd.
No, like a nurse.
So the real question is, has Apple acknowledged Tattoo Gate?
Of course not. No, they haven't said anything. As far as I know, I haven't seen any reports that they have.
Because in the past, they've been like, oh, you're squeezing it too hard, you know, that kind of thing.
You're holding it the wrong way. No, and the reason why it might be annoying for folks is, okay, who cares if you don't use the heart sensor, which I think is one of the dumbest features of the Apple Watch.
True.
Especially the one where you can send your pulse to someone else.
Oh.
That's really weird. The Apple Watch uses the heart sensor every 10 minutes to detect if you're wearing the watch. So you authenticate it because of Apple Pay. So you enter your PIN number.
See if they had swallowed a little glucose capsule.
That's true. But so you enter your PIN number when you first put it on, and then as long as you keep wearing it, you don't have to re-authenticate it because it knows that you're still wearing it because it knows you're alive. If you die or if you take the watch off, then you have to re-enter your PIN number. But the problem
Apple
is...
died, and I don't remember my PIN number.
Yeah, the problem is if it doesn't sense your heart rate, then it forces you to re-enter your PIN number every 10 minutes. So that is annoying, yeah.
Okay, so right. Tattoo Gate.
No, dang it. Now, the other issue was, if you don't like scratches...
I love scratches.
Oh, well, then this won't affect you at all. But if you don't like scratches, you shouldn't get the stainless steel Apple Watch.
Oh.
You know, there's three versions of the Apple Watch. There's the aluminum, the stainless steel, and the gold.
What about the Beyonce one that I heard about?
The Beyonce one. Did we talk about the Beyonce one last week?
I don't believe we did on the show, but
oh,
we
my
talked
goodness.
About it off the show.
Let's come back to the Beyonce okay. watch. So... I can't even focus now. A lot of folks on social media, because that's where everyone goes to complain, they're complaining that their steel Apple Watches are already getting scratched up.
What?
Yeah. So here's the thing. If you've ever owned a watch, which apparently these people haven't, stainless steel scratches. That's what happens when you get sand on it, when you rub it against your, I don't know, keys or your iPhone. It gets scratched. It's just a factor of life. Metal scratches. And this watch owners, people who have owned watches, they know this. So 9 to 5 Mac put out a really easy fix. You just buff it like every other stainless steel watch in existence. Or if you're really, you know, if you owned an iPod with the stainless steel case, you're very familiar with that. It got scratched up on the back all the time, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. But if you really just can't handle it, then you can get the aluminum model, which ironically is actually harder than the steel model. It's significantly harder, and it doesn't get scratched as easily. So.
Okay, so are we going to call this Buff Gate or Scratch Gate?
No. So, Beyonce. Let's go back to Beyonce for a second, then we'll get to our
Beyonce
third
gate.
Problem. Beyonce Gate. So, there came out a story before, actually, the Apple Watch came out officially, that there was a watch that only Beyonce had. And it was a solid gold, all gold Apple Watch. And it was just like the steel chain watch, except it was made of gold or steel case one. So and it's all gold, and there's no idea how expensive this must be, because the steel wristband adds several hundred dollars to the price because it's a lot of steel and it's very well made. And if you do 18 karat gold in that big, that has got to be ridiculous.
But she's the only one that has it.
Well,
so
no,
far.
it has come out that other people have it.
Oh, okay.
But it is not for sale. Mm. It is only an exclusive thing that it's when you're so important or you're so special that the $17,000 gold Apple Watch just won't do.
Yep.
You get the Beyonce gold watch.
So we can call this one Baygate, right?
I can't stop you. All right, so now for the first actual real problem with the Apple Watch. According to the Wall Street Journal, Apple has found a major defect in the taptic engine in its watches.
And the defect is not that they call it the taptic engine?
No.
Okay.
So if you're not familiar with it, the taptic engine is the feature that causes the watch to vibrate or tap the wearer.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty cool. It's a pretty groundbreaking little feature. It actually came out for use in nuclear engineering.
Hmm.
It's a way of communicating. It basically models sounds so that they feel like what they sound.
Hmm.
So the example that they give in the press conference was, you know, a tweet feels like a tweet on your wrist.
Hmm.
So you don't hear it, you feel it. You feel the tweet.
But it's the same sensation in your brain.
Right, right. Huh, or, well, you don't hear it as
right.
a sound, but like...
But you recognize it
feels
as the
like
same.
A, yeah, yeah.
No, I see where you're going.
Or like, instead of it just like a buzz, you feel like a thump, or, you know, a tap on your wrist.
Hmm. Yeah, okay.
So, and that's really the best way. Everyone that's actually experienced it has had difficulty describing what it feels like, because it just, they say it feels like what it sounds. And that's the only way you can describe it. It feels like you're hearing it on your wrist, I guess. So there were two companies that Apple contracted with to build the taptic engines, but apparently one of the Chinese suppliers produced faulty taptic engines. And it's, like I said, there's a lot of people who are saying that they got some of those. Apparently Apple tried to stop those from hitting the market. But some people on social media have said that they've gotten one of those. The Verge says that John Gruber from Daring Fireball received an Apple Watch that had a taptic engine that didn't work. So
okay.
That's one report that's pretty reliable.
Tapgate.
That's what we're calling it.
Nailed it. Nailed it.
What about Christina Applegate?
Oh.
We never got to that.
I've got bad news for you. That's just an actress.
Oh, man.
All right, well, if you have a suggestion or just have a comment for the show, give us a call or leave us a voicemail at 1-888-972-9868, or you can send us an email to feedback@deemable.com. Don't forget to vote for your favorite transition or segue of the evening. And don't forget to help us decide what stories we talk about on the show. Go to our subreddit page and submit a story and vote other stories up or down. Mm-hmm. Deemable.com/Reddit will take you there. It's really easy. If you've never done it before, go hang out in Reddit.
So
it's a great, it's a wonderful place.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Only good things happen there.
Only good things.
Or if you're scared of the internet, just stay at Deemable.com/Reddit at our subreddit page. It's fairly safe. I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
I'm Sean Birch.
And this is Deemable Tech. Thanks for listening.
Man, I didn't know you were down with it, homie.
This has been a production of WJCT Public Broadcasting. To find out more, visit us online at wjct.org.